why a play or two plays about LBJ? What was the motivation for pulling that in?
Well, as Robert Schenken said very memorably, we live in LBJ's world today, 50 years later. And it's really true. You know, the political landscape, the how polarized the political landscape is, completely has its seeds in the debates of the Johnson era and what role should government play in dealing with social inequity and social injustice. The political landscape of the Republican Party and the Democratic Party and shifting allegiances based on the civil rights movement. So much of the world that we live in are the results of course, the Civil Rights Act and all the Great Society programs and things that are still fiercely debated. So I think it's of vital importance that we look at that time and at the man who was our president during those years.
The first play all the way sort of dealt with the period from late 63 to late 64, basically after LBJ became president, after JFK's assassination, till about a year after that. What period does this next encompass?
Well, you know, like many sequels, The Great Society is a more sprawling play. It takes place over 3.5 years from right after the election in late 64 through March of 68 with a coda or an epilogue, one could say, at the very end that goes even later. And so it's encompassing many more events. It's a messier play, of course, because it's the shadow of Vietnam looms larger and larger and larger. And, of course, overtakes what LBJ is trying to do domestically. You know, Robert has said if All the Way is a drama, The Great Society is a tragedy.
We're going to play a little excerpt from a scene. It's a phone call between Chicago Mayor Richard Daley and LBJ in the White House. And could you just sort of set up the scene? What has led up to this?
So Mayor Daley is calling LBJ to complain about Martin Luther King and other civil rights movement leaders showing up in his city.
So let's listen to that.
What the hell is this clown doing in my city?
Oh, come on, man.
Did you know about this?
What, you think King runs his schedule by me?
He's organized demonstrations. He's picketing boycotts. This morning he marched to City Hall. He nailed his demands to the door.
Well, his name is Martin Luther.
You got to do something about it.
No, you got to do something about it. Now, we're trying to turn things around with my poverty programs, and Chicago has gotten its share. Some would say more than its share of federal monies, but they aren't getting to the people who need them. That's why King is there.
What are you saying? I'm stealing?
No, I'm not saying that. But 70% of the poverty funds in your town are going to salaries for patronage jobs.
I'm not supposed to take care of my people.
You're supposed to take care of all the people.
There's a lot going on there, isn't there, between these two sort of titans of their own worlds.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that I find so thrilling about both All the Way and The Great Society is LBJ is such a Shakespearean character. He's larger than life. His appetites are fierce. His mood changes are so quicksilver. You know, he's a completely dramatic, compelling dramatic character. But there's so many historical figures, George Wallace, of course, Dr. King, who's such a major figure, Mayor Daley in this piece, Senator Richard Russell in the first play. You know, it goes on and on and on. The bench of compelling characters, fascinating characters, is so deep with these plays.
I wanted to run by one other scene that I found particularly compelling, where we've got Martin Luther King and you've got Stokely Carmichael, and there's a very public break between these two increasingly divergent branches of the civil rights movement. Could you talk us into this scene?
Yeah, this scene is set in Greenwood, Mississippi. There was James Meredith was doing a solo march and was shot, and there was a rally in Greenwood, Mississippi. There was a lot of anger, a lot of calls for violence within the civil rights movement, and Dr. King's trying to tamp that down, and Stokely instead says enough is enough, and it's where the term black power begins to be coined in the play. So it's a hugely important pivot point in the story.
I know a lot of people are saying maybe nonviolence doesn't work anymore.
Yes, sir.
I don't believe that. I know a lot of people are saying maybe we should arm ourselves.
Yes. Oh,
that is absurd.
Yes.
George Wallace is always happy to see a riot because the minute we turn to violence, we have lost.
Right.
Yes, the oppressor never willingly gives up his power. Yes, freedom must be demanded.
Mm.
but violence is never the solution.
That's right.
Don't talk to me about freedom, that Statue of Liberty. I've been arrested 27 times, and I ain't going to jail no more.
I hear you.
I don't think we should wait on that cat Johnson to fix things. Johnson doesn't care about us except as cannon fodder. He wants to ship us off to Vietnam. I saw a sign on the road today. No Viet Cong ever called me nigger. That's right. Negroes should stay home from Vietnam and fight for black power here in Greenwood. Fight for it. The time for waiting has come to an end. The time for running has come to an end. You tell them white folks in Mississippi that all the scared niggers are dead.
Just to wrap up then, what do you feel you've gotten out of your work on this play cycle? And what have you come away with? And what do you hope audiences come away from it with?
I feel personally completely enriched, transformed by this deep dive into LBJ's legacy, Dr. King's legacy, what was going on in these crucial years in American history. And to look at it from an even wider lens, I just feel so proud that I work at an organization that is committed to telling new versions of stories from the past to better illuminate where we might head in the future. It makes me really proud.
Bill Rausch, thanks for talking to us today.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Liam.